Hey there, welcome into another episode of the Bandwagon Sports Podcast. I am Brian Moline.
Hey, I'm Lisa Braltz.
I think I'm John Steinbach.
We're in a brave new world, y'all. A world where the Chicago Cubs are the world champions.
It's weird. I was really expecting it to feel more like I had jumped dimensions. And everything is a little bit shinier and happier, I'd say.
Yes, yes, I would agree with that. We'll talk a little bit about the Cubs and their world championship on this episode. We'll also get into some other topics, including stadiums, sports stadiums, particularly some public financing of sports stadiums and what that's meant to the communities who have done that over the last few decades. We'll have our usual status update, I believe is the term we're using now.
I still like hashtag, though. We may make a move toward that.
All right,
but
very good.
I don't know. Anyway, sorry.
And we'll talk a little bit about with the Cubs and their World Series run going on, how that may have taken away from all of the election coverage that we were being swarmed with.
Or enhanced it.
Yeah. It's an open question. We'll discuss that here in just a little bit. We'll talk about those topics on this episode, and we will start with the Cubs winning the World Series. And John, I know for you and I as you know, diehard Cubs fans, it was a trying couple of weeks in a lot of ways. Certainly, all's well that ends well, but man, what a roller coaster ride!
I lost all my hair.
We'll have to provide a visual.
It was
before and after visual.
It was quite a couple of weeks. Starting, you know, basically the pressure I think really started game four against the Giants. The Cubs were down by four. We thought we were all coming back to Wrigley Field. Nobody wanted to go to Wrigley Field for a deciding game five, and the Cubs came back. Then they were down 2-1 against the Dodgers, and everyone saw Kershaw looming. Mm-hmm. They came back in that series. They won 3 straight games. And then, of course, they were down 3-1. I hope Lisa doesn't share the text that Brian and I were sending around.
There were some good ones.
When we were down 3-1. And then, of course, they won 3 straight games. And, well,
game seven was just nuts.
Just nuts. I happened to be at a local watering hole, the Esquire Lounge, which apparently was ground zero because there were people filming. People from our staff were there recording, which made me a little uncomfortable. But yeah, man, everyone there was flying high until
Chapman came in and gave up a home run in the eighth to tie the game. And
to the big bopper, Rajay Davis.
Yes, Rajay Davis, who, you know, was hitting like 230 or something. And yeah, but he can't hit fastballs low and in, apparently, which is what he got.
When he's really choked up on the bat, too.
Yeah. Yeah, so
I had left the room when that happened. I was outside probably getting some fresh air and just sort of – because surely nothing will happen.
You should know better by
and
now.
My husband, Jim, came outside and he's like, "You're not going to believe this game." I said, "Great, now I have to go back inside." So, yes, I really enjoyed – watching the game with you guys via our text messages, and we can talk about that here in a second. But go on to Are you going to finish this? Because we were in dire straits, and then
And then Chapman lucked his way through the ninth inning
somehow. I don't know how he got through that.
And of course, everybody knows it started raining. Everyone went back
That's
to.
Right, I forgot about the rain.
Delay.
That's right.
It's and then you know the Cubs all got together and. You know, I'm sure what happened was they got together and were like, just a normal hype session, like, we're really good, and apparently Jason Hayward led it, but this is going to go down, and it already has. You know, it's like the GOAT and everything else.
Narrative, baby.
Lore.
50
it's
years
lore.
From now, like, they're all going to be, they're going to do the movie, and they were all crying, and Jason Hayward, like, a halo appeared above his head, blah, blah, anyway. And then they come back, and you know, it's been overlooked, rightfully so, because Ben Zobrist hit pretty much, you know, the biggest hit in the history of the Chicago Cubs, at least since 1908. But Kyle Schwarber comes up after a rain delay and gets a huge hit into a shift, mm-hmm. which was amazing. And, you know, the story of Kyle Schwarber is a whole movie in and of itself, since he basically played two games and then the World Series.
I have a question. What does into a shift mean?
Okay, so what's become very popular in baseball these days is to play based on where hitters hit. So Kyle Schwarber and Anthony Rizzo are left-handed hitters, and they're very strong pull hitters. So basically what happens is the shortstop moves over to the other side of the field. So basically on the right side of the field, you now have three fielders. Mm-hmm. And third baseman is basically on the left side for just in case.
So he hit to the opposite field where there was nobody?
No,
or
he hit into the shift and they couldn't field it?
Yeah.
Oh,
wow. Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah. It almost looked like threading a needle in a way, like how it went through. Okay, interesting.
Uh-huh. And so then probably the right decision, but when I think people talked about Francona is he put Anthony Rizzo on base with an intentional walk, which people think was the right decision. But on the other hand, that decision really came back to haunt him because...
Yeah, well, and the reason that there was a base open for the intentional
walk... Oh, right. I forgot about that.
...was Chris Bryant hit a deep fly ball to center field.
Yes.
Now, we mentioned Kyle Schwarber got the hit, but the Cubs took him out because, well, let's just say Kyle Schwarber is not the fleetest of foot.
Hey, he stole a base in that game.
He did because no one was paying attention to him. But he's not the fastest guy out there, especially after his knee injury. So the Cubs put in a much faster base runner, Albert Almora, at first base. And when Chris Bryant hit a fly ball to deep center field, Almora was able to read the ball. He could tell, okay, it looks like this is going to get caught. So he alertly went back to first base, tagged up, advanced to second ahead of the throw. And if he's not on second base, Anthony Rizzo doesn't get intentionally walked, which means, you know, the table is not set
for
Ben Zobrist.
No, yeah, that obviously is a huge play. There was too much going on.
So many things.
Well, I don't have to give the – I mean, I feel like I've listened to like a million podcasts that have gone through this game, so I feel like I'm just repeating information. But then, yeah, Zobrist comes on, gets, you know, hits a double. Anthony Rizzo and Zobrist are going crazy. What did Rizzo say on the base? You can see him like, I can't believe that or something.
Yeah.
And then they intentionally walked Contreras or who was up next?
Let's see. Russell.
They intentionally walked Russell and then up comes
Miguel Montero.
The Cubs' third catcher of the game and hits a single that scores Rizzo, which again I think is sort of being overlooked, which ends up being the game winner because...
Because the Indians got one run back in the bottom of the inning after Carl Edwards Jr. came in, got the first two guys out. Then you have walk, double, and then Cubs bring in Mike Montgomery to get the final.
All knew was going to pitch the last pitch of the Cubs World Series. As soon as they traded for him in midseason, everyone said Mike Montgomery will be throwing the last pitch.
Are you being funny?
I'm
okay.
Being funny.
All right.
He was sort of an afterthought. I mean, they traded for him sort of before they got Chapman, but he wasn't like it was not a big move.
It was depth.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah. And it looks like he will be a starting pitcher, or at least have a chance to be a starting pitcher next year. But yeah, I think he would say he was the last person he would expect to be pitching in that situation.
Yeah. So yeah, the roller coaster of Game 7 ends in the Cubs' favor, 8-7 in 10 innings.
And you should talk about your favorite moment there.
My favorite moment, which you then said to me. This happens. It's just how he plays. So my favorite moment, and actually, so I was, so I had come inside from not watching, and was, and then decided that I need to start getting ready for bed. So I was like in my robe on the couch, and then so the final out happens, and Chris with a K, Bryant. Mm-hmm. Who is like a big giant dude. He's like super tall,
6'5",
isn't he?
Yeah,
which is pretty tall for a baseball player, I'm guessing. He seems so big, like looming over the plate because he stands pretty close to the plate, it seems like, in his batting stance. I don't know. Anyway, so he fields the ball and he's smiling. To me, he's smiling. It's kind of like dogs smile or babies smile in their sleep. Here's Chris Bryant smiling as he's fielding the ball like he's 10 years old. And he's like, I'm gonna make an out, mom, dad, you know. And then he slips and falls as he's throwing the ball, which could have been a disaster, correct? I mean, it could have flown over, you know.
Could have been.
Into the stands. And so I immediately hopped on Twitter. And actually, I watched between you guys texting me or us, the text group, and me reading Twitter during Game 7, I saw very little actual baseball, it feels like. But I immediately got online to hunt for the GIF of Bryant fielding that ball because it just made me so happy. And then the next day at work, John's like, well, he always does that.
He just always grimaces when he fields the ball. I rewatched it, and I think he really is smiling more than he normally does. But that is one thing I have noticed about Bryant over the last 2 years is that sometimes he has this, like, it looks like he's smiling when he's fielding balls. And before that, it, like, always bothered me. I'm like, why are you smiling? But I went back and looked for it, and I couldn't find any good examples.
I don't know. It just seemed like it was just such a routine ground ball, and like there's so much riding on this one play, but I felt like
it was a pretty good play. I mean, it was routine, but it wasn't, you know.
Yeah, he had to come in, right? I mean, he was charging the ball a little bit to field it, and he's a big, tall dude, so it's like, you know, takes him a little longer to get down there and, you know, whatever, arms, legs. As a tall person, I can sort of relate to that. But anyway, so that was my favorite moment. I just thought it was a nice, really sort of folksy way to end it. Very typical Cubs, we all puffy heart each other with glitter kind of ending. But I did enjoy, I know I didn't watch a lot of actual real-time baseball, and I had to listen to the announcers, which drove me crazy, the TV announcers, because I didn't have a radio, like a game on the radio. But I really enjoyed watching everything happening on Twitter, and I can talk a little bit about my favorite social media moment of the World Series a little bit later in the podcast. But it really does for me enhance watching sports sometimes, is to see people's reactions to it in real time. I really enjoyed that. I do have a question about something that you said, going back to the playing into a shift or hitting into a shift.
Mm-hmm.
You said that the trend now in baseball is to play this way. Who decides that? Like, who invented that? And then why do people follow those kinds of things?
It's actually goes really, they started Ted Williams. So,
okay, so it's not something new that
It actually became really popular in the last 2 years, I think, with sort of advanced statistics. You can say that someone...
Again, statistics.
Yeah, he's going to hit to... This player hits the right side 90% of the time. And I think... And you could really get into the weeds with this, as Brian knows. But actually, Joe Maddon... In Tampa Bay, about 5 or 6 years ago, actually was the guy who really pushed it. And now, this year, the Cubs used the shift fewer than any other team. And there's a lot of debate about that. But I think what it says more about the Cubs is that they really have an outstanding defense and their guys can cover a lot of ground. But, yeah, the shift is a very interesting thing that kind of comes and goes. The counterargument is, why doesn't the guy just... So Anthony Rizzo, I think he did this in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Just laid down a bunt and made it to first easily. Bunting is a lot harder than it seems, but...
I have one more question. Maybe for you guys can both answer this, and we've alluded to this a little bit previously, but I am, now that they've won, no superstition, no knocking on wood, we don't need to do anything crazy. Now that they've won, I mean, and this has been discussed probably ad nauseum. I haven't been paying that much attention. Now that there's no curse to overcome, there's no stereotype of lovable losers, how do they rebrand as winners, do you think? And will Chicago, I mean, does it matter? Are people just going to be like, yeah, we're going to win? I guess maybe the goal is to win the World Series next year, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
and
they certainly
forever
have
and ever, amen.
Well, not forever.
But
you got to have some doubts, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's never
maybe not 108 years.
It's never a certainty that they're going to win again, but I'd like their chances to win another one in the next 5 years, just based on the team they have.
Are they keeping the team together?
Oh, yeah. There's no reason to break it up.
I mean, they'll lose a few players. Dexter Fowler probably be gone. Jason Hamill's already gone. But actually, interestingly enough, the way they did that is probably worth talking about. They had him they had a club option where they could have kept him another year. And this is what sets, I think, Theo Epstein apart from a lot of other presidents, general managers, whatever you want to call his title. They went to Jason Hamill and said, you're probably not in our starting pitching plans this year. Either we can re-sign you and you'll be maybe a starter if someone gets injured, or you'll probably come out of the bullpen, or we'll release you, which might not look good optically wise, but you'll go on the free agent market. And he said, whatever. And there's a really nice article where they interviewed Jason Hamill and actually his wife, and they were like, you know, this organization has been really great to us, even though they released him. So that's a side note. But I think one interesting thing is, like, pretty much the morning after the Cubs won, everyone's like, enjoy it now, Cubs fans, because you guys are now the Red Sox and the Yankees. You
know? Right.
Like, and I was like, fine. That's what I've always wanted to be, that, right? So, I always wanted to be the obnoxious fan.
And that was, I think, kind of what I'm getting at is all of Chicago Cub fandom going to lean into being like everybody else now?
I hope so.
Right. So, so that's very interesting to me.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And I think... You know, the Red Sox have won it a couple times, and actually next year is the year that the Cubs will shatter all attendance records and all that stuff. But, you know, it'll never be like this again. The next time the Cubs go to the World Series, they're not going to it's not going to be the most watched baseball game in 25 years. And probably, if you take into account streaming and all the other ways people can watch, probably one of the most watched baseball games in 40 or 50 years, I would guess.
Yeah. This was a unique year, and I'll always remember it and cherish it for that. That being said, I want to do it again next year. Even though it won't feel the same, I want to do it again next year.
Sure. I mean, I enjoyed it the sixth time the Bulls won the NBA championship.
Sure. No, of course, but
yeah, it'll never be the same.
There's been so much, you know, time spent and investment in being that team. And then as every time Chicago got closer and then had their hopes dashed, it totally sucked. But it was also like the known territory, I suppose. And now we're in the unknown.
I knew it, but I hated it.
Yeah, right. No,
with every fiber of my being.
I mean, when they won, I'm not going to say like my head exploded. That was the greatest moment of my life or anything like that. It was fun. I enjoyed it. It was, but then, you know, you see the videos of all these older people who have been fans all their lives.
No.
You know.
I know.
I mean, I'm 39. I've watched the Cubs for a long time. It's actually, probability-wise, it's not that strange to have been 39 and watch your favorite sports team win a championship. There's 30-something teams, right? So it's not that. But to go, like, 80-something years.
You know,
so, I mean, it's so worth it. I don't care. I'd much rather have it happen now while my mom and my aunts are alive and they're huge fans.
Yeah, that was for me. The best part was being able to call my dad right after the game and celebrate with him. You know, he's 66 and he'd been watching the Cubs since the 1950s listening to him at least since the 1950s and had never seen a championship team. So that's what was awesome.
I really did like how it brought families together more than any other sporting event I think I've ever witnessed. So so sort of just to stay on topic a little bit but shift a little, we talked in the introduction about – so there's this other thing going on. While the Cubs are in the World Series, we're also in the lead up to Election Day, which I think in any other year would be a big deal, but maybe this year it's a little bit bigger of a deal, right? Because it's been so contentious and it's been going on forever. And
we are recording this the Election Day. By the time people listen, the election will be over. But that's not necessarily relevant to this conversation.
Right? So today it's on. It's finally happening. The Cubs have won the World Series. When I was following along with the game on Twitter, when the rain delay happened and there was like all these like looming clouds all over the place, like surrounding Cleveland, people were like, this is such a metaphor for this election year. and so it sort of begs the question, you know, I do a lot of reading on a lot of different topics, and there were some mumblings of people saying that this is a perfect example of bread and circuses, and that World Series run-up, especially with the Cubs being in the World Series, was taking people's minds off of some things that were at stake in terms of the election. There's a lot of – this is an important election if you're listening to the news at all in the run-up to the election. And then today I just heard, you know, there are people saying this is the most important election of my lifetime. There are also people saying the Cubs winning is one of the most important events of my lifetime, which is – I think there's room for both. But I'm curious to know what you guys think about this idea of bread and circuses and distraction by sports, Kardashians, Doctor Strange, whatever else is going on in the pop culture verse, and baseball was a huge part of that in the run-up to the election. I'm just – and even, you know, they showed pictures of Hillary Clinton's reaction when the Cubs win a game, you know. So there's also that intersection of the optics of politics, I guess, and sports. So – discuss briefly. What do you guys think? I mean, did we need this event to get us through the election? How are they related or not related? Anyone?
I certainly think because it came so – this election has been going on for a long time. and it came late in the election, I would say it was probably a welcome distraction just because the election itself has taken up so much mind space of everyone. And I would argue it really hasn't been focusing on – I mean, it's been focusing on important issues that are maybe even bigger than policy issues. I mean, you can make it that, you know, it's brought up sexism and racism and other things brought to light that, you know, normally maybe don't come up in presidential elections, though, of course, in our lifetime over the last 8 years they have. But, I mean, it's been very negative, and it's been kind of hard, I think, for everybody in America to sort of wake up and be like, oh – I mean, other than, like, the geeky political reporters, everyone is like, thank goodness today is, you know, the day that we're going to hopefully be done with this. And, you know, the Cubs, it was a welcome distraction for me. And I think for a lot of people who are just casual fans, I mean, I watch because I watch everything Cubs related. This morning I watched them on Jimmy Fallon, and Jimmy Fallon is – I'm not a huge fan of him. When he has his stick, but he was like, this is so great for the country right now. You really needed it. It's so good. You guys are just great. So good for the country.
Well, he's right, I think.
But, yeah, and I'll let Brian talk. But before I will, but I do think, you know, there is an argument to be made that obviously sports and culture in general are distraction from important issues for sure. I don't know if the Cubs this particular time are a good example of that. But certainly, I mean, you could talk about, for example, in the city of Chicago, the night the Cubs, I believe the night they won the NLCS or something, something like 17 people were shot or 17 people were murdered. There's a lot of violence going on in Chicago. You could make an argument that maybe the Cubs are bringing Chicago together in a way, but you could also make an argument they're distracting from important things. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to get into it, but certainly the Cubs fan base is a lot less racially diverse than the city of Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And I think John makes some good points there. And I'll just simply say that yes, and as someone who is kind of immersed in political coverage this time of year working in news, I was glad to be able to go home and really just kind of disconnect from that part of my life while the Cubs were playing and just ignore it and focus in on something that made me feel better.
Well, and I think human beings need that we're not serious people all the time. You know, I would read some of this really sort of reaching commentary about how sports infantilize. I don't know how to say it, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And that it's distracting us. But the thing is people are not 100% serious, hardworking, you know, always keeping up with the issues all the time. I mean, that's why we have music. That's why we have art. And I think that's why we have sports as well. It's just the spectacle, the dueling spectacles, or they weren't even dueling, but these occasionally intersecting spectacles that were parallel to each other and happening at the same time, I thought was a really interesting juxtaposition.
And there are certainly family members of mine who I absolutely have nothing to talk about except for the Cubs. And, you know, maybe that's good or bad that it hides some of those issues. But for me, especially, you know, during this election, I think it was important to be able to be like, hey, the Cubs won. That's great.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever. Instead of, you know, having to, you know, everyone has – it's important to find some way to connect to people. And I'm not going to pretend like the Cubs winning the World Series is going to bridge a gap between some of the deep political divides. But on the other hand, in my family at least, it's a step in the right direction for some things.
It's awesome.
Yeah, good deal. So, cool. Yeah, that's a little look at how the Cubs gave us a distraction during a contentious election season. Now I think it's kind of on to our main topic du jour here. And Mr. Steinbacher, with Illinois getting started in their basketball season and their renovated State Farm Center that's finally completed after, what, about a four-year process, I think it was. I thought it might be a good time to kind of take a look at what's going on with stadiums, not only here in Champaign-Urbana, but, you know, some of the discussion, debate about whether stadiums, when they're renovated or rebuilt for different purposes, are actually good for the communities that have those stadiums.
That's right. First official game is this Friday, and we're playing Southeast Missouri, which I had to just check on my phone.
Huge rivalry there.
Oh, that's good. That should have been my rivalry this week.
Down with SEMO.
But yeah, this stadium has been a long time in building, and you know, financed, I think, mostly through private fundraising and corporate support. And there's a big debate. You know, you could have a large debate about building these giant Mondo stadiums and college campuses. But, I mean, I think that there, none of the money is coming out of the educational stuff, and that's pretty clear. Obviously, there's a larger debate to be had there. But I think, you know, I'm glad they kept the State Farm Center. I think it's kind of an icon, whether or not it looks very dated for sure, but I think, you know, in a good way, and as we move on.
It's almost cool in its datedness now. We've come around
to
that part of the
retro.
Cycle.
Yeah. So I think that's good. But we were talking about that, and we'll probably talk about Illini women's and women's basketball in the future, though I will say the women losing an exhibition game to Drury State was not a good sign. But it sort of brought off the larger topic, and this is a huge topic, obviously, throughout the country. You have, in the NFL, you have the Raiders potentially moving to Las Vegas, maybe still moving to L.A. There's all kinds of stadium talk going on there. There's always some team who needs a new stadium, can threaten to move somewhere else or something like that.
My favorite of that is St. Louis, which lured the Rams from Anaheim with a new stadium 20 years ago. Couldn't keep the Rams now because their stadium deal wasn't as good as the one out in Inglewood, California. So the Rams have gone full circle.
And, of course, the debate, although I think I found an article on Marketplace.
Oh, hey.
Yeah.
APM, baby. American Public Media.
So in the bigger pop, you know, the sports talk radio world, there's this debate whether whether building stadiums is worth it economically. You know, it brings people to the field. You know, it brings people to the city. They go out to eat. They stay in hotels, et cetera, et cetera. But here's the lead quote from this article, which is from 2015. There are lots of things economists disagree about, but the economic impacts of sports stadium isn't one of them. If you've ever had a consensus in economics, this would be it, says Michael Leeds, a sports economist at Temple University. There is no impact. I looked around, and it's pretty much, you know, it's just it sort of makes sense when you think about it, especially like the NFL, but also Major League Baseball and these other things. For the NFL, you're basically talking about 12 days a year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And billions and billions of dollars are going into this, and you're much better off building like a small mall or something that will be filled every day. So it makes a lot of sense. But on the other hand, it doesn't matter. It's like, so the best example right now I think we talked about is in Arlington, Texas. The mm-hmm. Texas Rangers have a baseball stadium that is 22 years old, which is in the stadium world is not very old.
Yeah.
I would think. I mean,
no,
I guess
it's not.
And I believe on the ballot today they have, well, by the time this is on the air, we'll know, but they have a ballot initiative about whether or not to tax the state and agree to fund this stadium. And I won't go into the details because people know a lot more than I do. But, I mean, it's crazy. It'll probably pass, and pretty much all research suggests it's not a win at all for Arlington at all.
So, yeah, Texas is also just the land of stadiums.
Right.
I mean, high school stadiums are as big as some college stadiums here.
Yeah, my wife and I went on vacation to New Mexico last year when we drove through a lot of Texas to go see some family that lives near Austin. And it was amazing to me. We'd come into these small towns, and I'm talking about, you know, 3,000-4,000 people, like the size of a St. Joseph or a mm-hmm. Mahomet or, you know, those types of towns. You come into the edge of town and – you know, you'd pass your usual gas station and a couple other things, and it didn't look like a real prosperous community overall.
Right.
Then all of a sudden, you'd see this huge monstrous structure. It was the high school football stadium.
It's like Friday Night Lights.
That seated thousands of people.
Yes.
The stadium capacity was more than the population of the town, and that was not uncommon.
And I mean, I think this goes actually right back to what we were just previously talking about. Are these cities investing in the right kind of things, or is this just one giant golden distraction?
Right. Well, and having a somewhat of a municipal, working for a municipality in the background, stuff like this, projects like this, and also I think it's funny that you would bring up building a small mall. I'm not sure I would have used a mall as a good example of a way to put.
Sure,
people.
I'm
just kidding. But
that was what the article said. Was basically like you're better off building a mall Which not very big, just in terms of economic right. impact. We can get to like.
Oh yeah. No, but like it's just funny that of all the things like the mall, because all you hear about is like the death of malls. But anyway, but I think it can be seen as a bit of a distraction, and I think municipalities always want to build this stuff. They always want it.
Yeah, there's a couple things going on there. I think the NFL has been the best at this, too, of basically holding things over cities' heads like, well, if you don't upgrade your stadium, we could always move your team to Los Angeles, or we could always move your team to Las Vegas. And it might not even be implicitly said, but it's out there. And so you have these cities essentially kind of competing against each other to have these teams. And certainly, you know, there's a certain amount of, you know, civic pride and all that stuff that goes into having some, you know, a professional sports team. And fans, I get it. You want to have a professional sports team. But I'll be honest with you. I have a lot of friends who live in St. Louis. I lived there for a couple of years and went to college in Missouri. And most of my friends, even those who were Rams fans, have basically just said, all right, fine. We don't need you.
Right.
They've got baseball. They've got hockey. I think they're just fine with the Rams going back to L.A.
Going back to the high school thing, though, for a second, it strikes me, though, Brian, when you were talking about traveling through Texas and seeing these huge stadiums that whose capacity was larger than the population of the town itself, I think the irony is that for those projects, it is good economic development for those cities in a way, because it does, because football in Texas, for example, is so huge. People from other towns, the entire population of one small town will travel to this other small town, eat at their restaurants, go to their games. Do you know what I mean? So that economic development model works a little bit on a much smaller scale with these high school teams. I'm just using Texas as sort of an example, but it's bad, but it looks bad. And it is bad, I think, sometimes because there is at least the perception, if not the reality, of these stadiums being built at the expense of education and schools. So something is always going to suffer when these things are built, I think. I just want to throw that in there.
Sure.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. You hate to be like, I'm going to tell this small town in Texas how to, you know.
Well, yeah, that's not what I'm doing.
Right? No, I know.
Thinking,
I know you're
thinking
not
thinking aloud.
Oh, I know. I totally agree. I'm trying to think of from my own perspective, like, you know, if some town, like, if Champaign had a thing on the, I have to say, like, if Champaign had where I live, if they had something on the ballot about, will you pay a certain amount of tax for a minor league baseball stadium? I might even want to do it because I think it's worth it. But I don't necessarily think. At least they're voter initiatives, right? At least they're not when you see like city councils making these decisions.
Yeah,
then it's really
that that has happened on many occasions,
right.
where some kind of city council or county board is making that decision, and it's not actually on the ballot for the voters. So,
but I mean, I'd much rather be paying taxes for new schools, which we'll see how that happens in Champaign, but that's locally relevant. So, you know. If people are all for it, that's fine. But if it's just, you know, if it's a small percent, if you're doing it for a small percentage of people or, yeah, it's sticky.
It is sticky. And, you know, and I think we talked a little bit when we were prepping for this just about, like, you know, I'm a frequent visitor now back to my old stomping grounds of Minneapolis, St. Paul, and they have a stadium for everything now. And when I was a kid, everything happened pretty much in the Metrodome. When I was a teenager, and there was and then the hockey stadium was like where the Mall of America is now. So was the football and baseball stadium. But now the Gophers have just a football stadium, which next year will be used as a professional soccer stadium as well, while the professional soccer stadium is being built in St. Paul. So I just wonder, and so with the dome, with the Metrodome, what was really striking to me is, we talked a little bit about this, and we don't have to talk about it today, but we talked about it when we were preparing, is like some stadiums are still standing that haven't been in use for a while, or arenas of some type. They're empty. They're just there. The dome, they like destroyed that thing. I'm sure something else has gone in its place. I don't know what. But it was reduced to rubble. And that, you were talking about the length of time that a stadium is around. In stadium years, the dome really wasn't that old.
30 years,
It was built in 1980 or 81, yeah, I think, is when it opened for business after its roof being deflated by 42 inches of snow in 3 days. I vividly remember that in January of 1981. So, yeah, I mean, it really wasn't that old, and they got rid of it. And
but they, and like you said, they used it a lot. They used it for college football,
basketball,
NFL,
regional
basketball. I mean, it was definitely utilitarian for sure. It was also a terrible place to see a baseball game.
It was awful.
Rest in peace, Metrodome. All right. Well, is it time for our status update? Hashtag, social media, whatever.
I think you're forgetting about the rivalry.
Oh, no, I am. I am forgetting about the rivalry. What do you have for us, Steinbach?
Lay it on us.
Well, we'll keep this quick because it's something that I really don't know much about. And it's really, really, it's not, this time I'm not going deep. It's a rivalry of rivalries. So it's a little meta. But I thought it was worth mentioning because both games are going to be big this year for the first time in a little while. I'm talking, of course, the Iron Bowl, which is Auburn versus Alabama, versus the game, which is Michigan versus Ohio State.
Oh, interesting. I like this idea.
These are by far and away, no offense to the big game, which apparently is what, like California versus Stanford. But these are clearly the two biggest rivalries in college football by far, and the only question is which one is bigger. They're both coming up in a few weeks, both all top 10 teams, I think, right now. Alabama, number one. Michigan, number two. Ohio State, just a couple back. Auburn, a few back of that. These two games are huge. They're very big regional things. Obviously, Auburn versus Alabama, it's an intrastate rivalry. Both in Alabama.
With it, yeah, yes. Interstate, yep.
And then you have Michigan, Ohio State, which traditionally has been huge, kind of died out a little bit. Michigan and Ohio State's been good for a long time. Michigan was not so good for a while, but now Michigan, number two team in the country. They've got Jim Harbaugh.
Captain Khaki.
It's huge. And I just think it's really interesting that these two games, they're, you know, it's Big Ten versus SEC. It's the South versus the Midwest. It's just got all these great coaching histories. Bear Bryant, Bo Schembechler,
Woody Hayes.
I mean,
whoever they are who coached Auburn over
the years. Yeah, right. it's just got so much history, and maybe definitely the greatest, in my opinion, probably the greatest college football game of the last 10 years was the Iron Bowl where. They tried to kick the field goal, and then Auburn ran it back, not only because of the game, but because Auburn went on to win the national championship.
That was Cam Newton's year, right?
Yeah, specifically because of that. So it's just there's these two regional amazing rivalries that are clearly the tip of the iceberg. You know, I think in college basketball it's Duke, North Carolina, it's everything else. But here I don't think there's a clear favorite. I've looked it up. They've both been, they're both over 100 years old. There's all kinds of national championships involved in all the teams. I mean, I probably, of any of them, Auburn has the fewest, but one is just called the game, one is the Iron Bowl. Michigan is the largest football stadium in the world, right?
I think it still is.
Yeah. What is it, like 110,000 people?
Yeah,
I mean,
it's never more rocking than when Ohio State comes to town. Unfortunately, this year it's in Ohio State.
So only like 90,000.
Yeah, only like 90,000 people. But yeah, it's just, I mean,
oh, it's going to be so quiet.
This is the tip of the iceberg in terms, and it's just, it's good for college football. I think that all the teams are good because it's been a while since all four teams are good. So it's just kind of exciting that coming up.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I've always been a Big Ten guy, so Michigan, Ohio State for me. But that's just because I think where I grew up.
Right, right. I mean, it's interesting to think of people like in the Northeast or California or whatever. They probably like, I don't really care.
Yeah, people on the West Coast are like, Cal Stanford, woo!
Right, yeah.
And people out East might be, Army, Navy, yay! Yeah,
which right. I kind of like that regionalism aspect. We all have the right. same feelings. It's just different teams. Right. And we can't understand each other's traditions, but we try.
We do try.
We try. Good job. I like that one. Rivalry of rivalries.
Good work, Steinbacher.
Yeah, woo.
Now, after I tried to skip that, we'll go to our...
Well, I put in like 10 minutes of work into that, so I didn't want that to go to waste.
Now we'll go into social media time. Hashtag, status update, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
Who's up?
I'll go.
All right.
I'll go, because it's World Series related. We'll get that out of the way. I'm talking about the tweet. You guys know the tweet I'm talking about? The tweet?
You have to be more specific.
Right, that's true, you guys. But to me, there is like one tweet that like everybody started talking about because somebody unearthed it. I'm still not convinced it's not a hoax, and maybe somebody listening.
Oh, the yearbook dude?
No, not yearbook dude, because we talked about that last time, I think. This is somebody who goes by the name of Gio. Gio?
Oh, yeah,
Gio.
Yeah.
The tweet said, and I actually, like some, I think Kai Ristall...
Marketplace.
Yeah. Actually retweeted it, and that's how I saw it. He's like, and his tweet was like, has anybody else seen this? So it was early in the virality of this particular tweet. Somebody with the Twitter name Rays Fan Geo tweeted, 2016 World Series, Cubs versus Indians. And then the world will end with the score tied in Game 7 in extra innings. Hashtag apocalypse. Tweeted November 4th, 2014.
Mm-hmm.
So it was 2 years ahead of time. They predicted that the apocalypse would actually happen and that there was no winner. So they didn't, this person did not tweet who they thought would win the game. But lots of people think it's a hoax. I just thought it was really cool because you watched it take off in my Twitter feed. Like, I of course retweeted it. I'm not sure if Bandwagon retweeted it, but too many Twitter accounts to keep track of. But to watch it explode just as I retweeted it and seeing it, not because of me retweeting it, of course, but many other people. It was just really fascinating, and I love stuff like that, just crazy, outrageous predictions. And we talked about the yearbook guy predicting in 1993 that the Cubs would win in 2016. That's great, but I thought this one was quite funny. So anyway, I'll post a link to the Snopes page about it. So
very good. John, you want to go next?
Sure. Mine is sort of relevant to an underlying theme we've talked about a couple times here, and that's politics and sports. A couple weeks ago, I don't know exactly when, at the University of Wisconsin, there were some fans who had, I believe they had Obama and a noose.
Yeah.
It was just a terrible thing. I don't care where your politics are. That is just a terrible, terrible image. And they got kicked out of the game, blah, 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 blah. I won't get into that, but there's been, I guess, I haven't really been paying much attention, but apparently it's led to some incidents on the University of Wisconsin campus. The University of Wisconsin, you know, I think the University of Wisconsin is not alone or an island as far as the way politics have gone this year and having sort of stress and strife. But I was glad and sort of, I'm heartened, but also sad to see University of Wisconsin basketball player, preseason Big Ten Player of the Year, Nigel Hayes, has sent a tweet, and I'm not going to read it. We'll put it up, but it's well worth reading. But basically, he's saying, as a student, I demand change from the University of Wisconsin, and it's related to these racial incidents. And here's an example, I think, of, you know, sports. Sports can be good. They can be bad. They can reflect the times. But, you know, I really appreciate a college student-athlete standing up. Personally, I wish that one of the student athletes at the University of Illinois at some point over the last 30 years had stood up against something I really don't like, and I won't get into that. But I really appreciate Nigel Hayes, who actually has a lot to lose for, you know, having an opinion, standing up and speaking out against this. And I think some other players have as well. And I like to see it. I like, you know, we've talked about this a lot. I think we all agree that, you know, college athletes are often seen as parts in a whatever,
right.
And it's nice to see them have personalities and beliefs outside of just whatever. So that's, you know, we'll share it, but that's what I wanted to bring up.
Cool. Mine is I don't know if necessarily lighter than that, but it's different than that. It also has to do with the Cubs in the World Series. And ironically, this article was written by someone who's not on Twitter, at least not that I could find. But he's one of my favorite sports writers right now working. It's Wright Thompson for ESPN. And we talked about, you know, the Cubs World Series win, you know, being special for older fans who had not ever seen a championship in their lifetime, 70, 80, 90 years. Well, Wright Thompson went to Chicago and wrote an article all about fans who had lost someone who was a Cubs fan who had never gotten to see the Cubs win, and just how the whole experience was a bit more bittersweet for them. I won't get into a lot of the details about it, but we will tweet out the link to Wright Thompson's article, and I highly, highly recommend it. He's, I think, one of the best sports writers out there right now, and he outdid himself on this one. So that's mine.
I want to talk more about him someday in relation to other sports writers, because I think that would be an interesting conversation.
Indeed.
There's a lot of great Cubs stuff, obviously. The guy who had the Strohs for 30 years. You know,
oh, I saw that. I saw that. Yeah, you know, so it was a Coors.
It was a Coors.
And
yeah.
Strohs, Coors. I wonder how that tasted.
A little skunky.
I got like a couple of cans of beer in our outside fridge that are 2 years old that no one's going to touch. So 34.
Well, you just have company over and you don't tell them that it's 30. That's cheap.
Well, those are probably nicer, too. The thing about the Coors is probably it's like, it tastes about the same.
Womp, womp.
Okay. So we done, y'all?
I guess we're done. So it's that time again where we thank you for joining us on the bandwagon. We just love listeners like you. Thank you for paying attention. Today's Bandwagon podcast was produced by us, Brian Moline, Lisa Braltz, and John Steinbacher joined us again. He's back. So
nice to join us, John.
Thank you.
Yeah, we'll see.
There are other people who have helped make Bandwagon happen. Scott Cameron, Jim Kelly, Mike Bowman, Taylor Judd, and the band REM, circa 1985. How old were you in 1985?
Nine.
Eight? You were eight, you were nine, mm-hmm. and I was older than that. So we'll just
go Bears.
The Super Bowl shuffle, right? That was the year. You can find us on the web at will.illinois.edu/bandwagon. There are links there. We have show notes. We have videos. You can subscribe to the podcast and rate it in iTunes. If you rate us there, that really does help people find us. So help others. Do your bit. Vote Bandwagon. Rate us in iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter at Bandwagon Podcast. All consonants all the time. Get our most recent thoughts on the things we've discussed today. You guys got to get on the tweeting tip, though. We got to tweet more, guys. But we have, there are tweets there. Don't get me wrong. So, yes, please follow us. And then Brian, John, and I all have our own Twitter accounts, and you can follow us there if you want to. We like your questions, your links, your recommendations, so bring them on. We will be back soon. I think we have to negotiate the upcoming holidays, so we'll be back soon with a brand new episode. But until then, adieu.